Inside Red Bull, Bora Hansgrohe, the OFIB online podcast on the Tour de France. For 3 weeks, we accompany team manager Ralf Denk and the biggest and most successful German cycling team through the Tour de France. Do you have questions for Ralf Denk? Send them to tobias.roof@ofbmedia.de. And now enjoy the new episode.
Remco Evenepoel wins the 15th stage of the Tour de France. In his furious mountain finish, he beats the dominator Tadej Pogacar in the sprint and secures the long-awaited victory for the Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe team. Before that, a crash by Jonas Vingegaard overshadows the grand finale. In a seemingly harmless right-hand turn, the rider who was second overall until then crashes and has to abandon the race injured. After the scary moment, the Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe team pushes hard into the final climb. When Pogacar takes the lead, only Isaac Del Toro and Remco Evenepoel can follow. In the end, the Belgian has the best legs. We are analyzing this incredible stage and the entire second week of the Tour, and for that we are heading back over to France, and I will ask Ralf Denk right away, how happy are you with this result and did you expect such a finale today?
Yes, happy, super happy. It doesn't get any better. And it's great that Remco wins our first non-time trial stage at the Tour de France. He has already won stages here, but only in time trials, so to speak, but never man against man. And today, man against man against Pogacar, against the reigning champion of the Tour de France. And yes, it is a big win for us today and makes us all very, very happy. I can imagine you still sound very, very composed.
We are now analyzing the whole thing step by step, but unfortunately we have to start with what happened before the final climb, specifically the scene of the day. In a right-hand turn, Jonas Vingegaard falls, his front wheel seems to slip away, he crashes, and it is relatively quickly clear that he has to abandon this tour. How did you experience and see that scene? Was it just an unfortunate incident, or what is your impression? Yes, you can see from that example or the accident actually the current challenges of road cycling as well.
It was a roundabout, which ultimately had an exit and an entrance on that side, and that was a really sharp corner. What strikes me as a bit strange, or makes me wonder, is that the team around Jonas Vingegaard, Visma Lease bike, actually entered the roundabout as a group. And more or less everyone made it through except for Jonas, but there really aren't any good images. I tried to take a closer look at the details myself now. And yes, ultimately, the result does not change. He crashed from what it looked like, a broken collarbone. He also got a sling from the paramedics right away. It was definitely impossible to continue. Of course, a bitter loss for the team. I also feel sorry for Jonas that he has to say goodbye to this year's Tour de France like this. But it is also part of our sport, and you can see from this example how quickly it can happen. Yes, definitely.
As you correctly said, there are no clear images. Florian Lipowitz said he was just able to brake behind it and ride around it. He thinks maybe the corner was a bit underestimated. It is difficult to really say in the analysis what the final cause was, right? Yes, it is really difficult. Also, can you blame the team? I do not know.
Can you blame the organizers? Well, they did mark it, secured it with straw bales and so on. But as I said, these are the current challenges in road cycling too. We have many roundabouts, we have many speed bumps, we have many traffic jams areas.
That doesn't make it any easier for races to run without crashes. You had to put that scene behind you very quickly. The pace was only eased for a moment because the summit finish was already coming up, and it looked like since Lease a Bike had been pushing so hard until then that you guys were taking over a bit. You went full gas into that climb. Tell me, what was your tactic behind that? Did you already know, hey, Remco has good legs today, or why did you ride into it so aggressively? Yes, first of all, you have to say, first, the group that Jonas crashed in waited for Jonas. That is an unwritten law.
When a top rider crashes, you don't just take advantage of the situation. And the group Jonas was in waited at first. We delayed by a minute. So the lead group gained another minute of an advantage because we waited for Jonas for a bit. But once it was clear that Jonas would not be coming back, then the race continued. And at first, the Bahrain Victorious team took over. That was not us. And only when the final climb began did we take over. And our goal was actually to ride the first three kilometers, which were very steep, at a moderate pace. We didn't want to prepare any kind of attack. We just wanted to see that we took control of the race, that the pace was fast, but that there were no attacks. And Jahindel did that very, very well. Then Tadej Pogacar took over and the gap opened up, and then only Remco Evenepoel and Isaac Del Toro were able to follow Tadej Pogacar.
Yes, I would like to go into that with you. Pogacar takes over in that situation, but it was not the classic I am going full gas now Pogacar attack, but he simply forced the pace in such a way that it was at least still possible to keep up. Why does he do something like that? Was that with the intention of helping Del Toro, which is actually crazy in itself? If he is in the yellow jersey, it should really be the other way around. Or what do you think was the intention behind it?
Yes, it is no secret that Tadej Pogacar and Isaac Del Toro get along well. They also still had with Adam Yates, a helper up front who came back from the lead group. They were then able to use him for the pace setting as well. And yes, of course, it is also no secret that they would like, that the team UAE Emirates would like to stand on the podium in Paris with two riders. And Isaac Del Toro is logically the one on the team who can manage to also be on the podium in Paris. And accordingly, you can play such tactical games when the leader has a 5-minute lead.
Okay, so actually help from the boss himself. Looking back, that was obviously perfect for you. But let's be honest, that only Remco could still hang on there. I think that surprised a lot of cycling fans, including me. Not you, or how did you see it? I would say it was definitely a stamp of approval for our strategy since the end of April.
And there was another coaching change within the team for Remco Evenepoel, and some bold decisions were made there. By bold, I mean he rode Liège-Bastogne-Liège at the end of April, and didn't ride another race until the Tour de France. So that is more than 2 months without a race. That is something quite unusual in professional cycling. But the new coach is the former coach of Jonas Vingegaard. He chose that approach. We gave him a free hand so that he, let's say, could take that bold step. We didn't interfere there, and I can only congratulate the new coach, Tim Heemskerk, today for what he has done with Remco from the end of April until now. So really this full focus on the Tour, fewer races.
It was also in the media before regarding his weight that he has a few kilos less just to keep up over those steeper mountains. Was that also a factor, do you think?
Well, it is a total package, and we have already talked about weights here before. I will not reveal any exact numbers here. That is Remco's personal right, and I do not want to interfere with that. But you can see that there is not much room left for improvement, or in this case, for reduction regarding Remco's weight status. And yes, it is just the case that for mountains like today's finale, you have to be relatively light. But one thing must not be forgotten. Weight is not everything. You also have to be able to deliver the performance accordingly. And that exact balance is what matters. And I would say, so far, everything looks very, very good for Remco. Today, he definitely had it. Let's talk about the finale. Now, the three of them are pulling away at the front.
Pogacar sets a high pace the whole time until the end, a very high pace. No one else can follow. And now it is actually 2-1 in terms of team tactics. Nevertheless, Remco is the fastest in the end. I had the feeling that it was also the first time that Pogacar did not look quite as fresh, at least as far as the sprint is concerned. Was that simply a tactical error by UAE? Did Remco do that well, or were they all just the limit and Remco was the better sprinter? How did you see the finale?
Well, for me, Isaac Del Toro was the most at his limit. That also reflects the final result. He finished third and last in the three-man sprint. That Remco is very punchy, we know. He was also yesterday, for example, at the finish line, he was still able to gain a few seconds, for example, on Rafael Ayuso. Yes, ultimately, it was a man-to-man duel where Remco was better today than Paul Pogacar.
Did you give him any instructions for the finale, or was it just that we talked about the icon rider yesterday, that killer instinct to actually win this race?
Those are the moments where the truly special, iconic riders show their talent and their skill. And that is why they are so iconic, because they win such prestigious mountain finishes like today at the Tour de France instead of coming in second or third.
Yes, but we have a second rider in your dual leadership, and that is Florian Lipowitz. He was then able to pull away from Ayuso a bit at the back with Paul Sexus and is now fifth in the general classification. Was that the maximum today? Was he not quite fit? Because actually everyone expected, okay, such long, hard climbs. That is Florian Lipowitz. That tends to suit him. How was it today?
Yes, it is a matter of nuances at the front, and Florian was really good, and I'm also happy for Florian that he was able to improve today in the general classification from 6th to 5th place, that we made up some time on Juan Ayuso from Little Trek, and he did exactly the right thing. We had, he was in the second group. He didn't have to work because Remco was up front, and we made Paul Sexus do all the work. And there is still over a week of the Tour de France left to race. That also doesn't leave a young athlete like Paul Sexus completely unaffected. The energy he had to use on the final climb today, while Florian was able to save some strength on his wheel. And so I expect in the final week, when it really goes into the high mountains where the climbs are not 10, 11, 12 kilometers long like now, but the Col du Galibier is 30 kilometers long. And I expect a very, very strong Florian Lipowitz there. And we will see then how we can use that tactically.
But also congratulations on the performance that Florian showed today. Does tactical use mean that Florian Lipowitz could possibly also provide some support for Remco Evenepoel?
It is far too early to even talk about that now. We are enjoying the victory today of Remco Evenepoel. It is also a victory for the entire team, because when you saw what the team achieved today on the final climb, it was not just an individual performance by Remco, but truly one by the entire team. And tomorrow is a rest day, so we will also enjoy the one or other moment of this victory. On Tuesday is the time trial, and after the time trial, we will look at the general classification, and then we will come up with a tactic for how we will approach the stage on Wednesday, and who works for whom, and what the overall structure looks like. But that is much too early. Today, we are enjoying the moment.
And rightly so. We will also talk briefly about the upcoming time trial after the rest day in a moment. However, it must be said, and you have actually already drawn the conclusion, it is a really good starting position now. We have Remco Evenepoel in second, the new second, also due to the withdrawal of Jonas Vingegaard. 1 minute behind is Del Toro, followed by Seixas and Lipowitz. If you draw a line under these 2 weeks now and you go into it with a position like that, you probably would have signed up for that at the beginning, right? Definitely, if someone had said, okay, you're sitting in second and fifth place in the general classification before the second rest day and you've already won a stage.
The time trial hasn't taken place yet, where Remco is definitely also to be seen among the extended circle of favorites. Then up to now, it's already a good tour, but the tour also ends in Paris. And I want to repeat myself again, where we also did the Tour de France preview here. The final weekend around Alpe d'Huez with the really big giants like the Col du Galibier or the Col de la Croix de Fer. There will be another shakeup, and that is why you cannot say now that it is over and that the way it looks in the general classification, it will stay that way until Paris, because there are still some real Alpine giants to come.
But that has also given someone like Remco Evenepoel a massive confidence boost, I think. I only briefly heard the interview at the end where he said it means a lot to him to win a stage like this and not, in quotation marks, just in the time trial where he knows he can do it. You approach those long mountains differently now when you know you have won this thing or a long climb like that, right? Yes, of course. And there is the saying, faith can move mountains.
And that is definitely very, very helpful now for what is still to come for Remco. He proved today that he can ride with Tadej and with the best of this year's Tour de France. And that definitely gives him a boost of self-confidence.
Very, very good. Ralph, before we get to the time trial after the rest day, we still have one or two things to catch up on that happened yesterday. I heard both Florian Lipowitz and perhaps you noticed it too. We talked about how many fans were really on the course yesterday. Florian Lipowitz thanked everyone multiple times again today. He was still a bit overwhelmed. Did you also notice when leaving how much was really going on around you?
No, it was a topic of conversation in the paddock before the start again today. It's crazy what was going on there in the structurally weak Alsace region, how many people actually found their way there. And we talked yesterday about the course layout, which was practically ideal, but also how many German fans were there. And I perhaps wasn't able to reflect that here in the podcast yesterday because I wasn't at the track myself. I was in the team bus. It wasn't by the track. It was more towards the valley. And what the racers told me today and the journalists too. And yes, they often didn't get to the next hotel until 2 or 3 because they were stuck in traffic. The whole mountain was blocked. I think that is also a sign that Germany would be ready for a Tour de France start again. When I think of the many German flags along the route and the many names painted on the roads.
He is definitely making an impact. I think you can really say that. We had a second, not quite as pleasant story. It was about an incident with the doping controllers. It was reported that Jonas Vingegaard's doorbell was rung at 2 in the morning and then Tadej Pogacar's at 5. Both took it relatively calmly, but of course it is deadly for recovery, Tadej said in an interview now without wanting to pass the buck, but perhaps that was even the few percent why Jonas Vingegaard was not quite as attentive in the right turn today. How do you see such an incident? To what extent does that really affect a subsequent stage like today? Yes, I have always said that cycling is definitely the most strictly controlled sport.
We also have a pitch black history, and it is good that there is such a close monitoring. Whether you really have to conduct checks at night, well, you can certainly put a big question mark behind that. Purely according to the rules, it is possible. So we have to be available 24/7. we have no legal grounds to take action against that. But 2 o'clock is, of course, deep sleep phase. Five is not much better either. And that really takes energy. And I would have wished that if you do such an action, maybe because you want to see what the racers are really doing at night or what happens in the body, then we should have perhaps done it more comprehensively. Well, we were not affected. Team Decathlon was not affected either. How it was with Lidl, I do not know now, but only with two teams. I don't know the background. And if it's our turn the next night or the night after or other teams' turns, then it's fair in a way. If it was just an isolated case for those two teams, then I find the move very, very harsh.
Then we will keep an eye on that. You will surely report back when they show up at your door, yes. But now it is actually time for a day of rest. Tell us briefly, you said you want to celebrate the victory a little bit. What is coming up next?
Yes, well, by celebrating, I don't mean that their beer, wine is on the table, but we will certainly have a toast to it tonight, this evening. Maybe not everyone will go to bed at 11 since tomorrow is a rest day. Perhaps we will have a nice glass of red wine, but there won't be a party at our hotel because the Tour de France is far too hard for that. And with the rest day tomorrow, everyone has to do their homework. Everyone has things to do tomorrow. And that's why I think it will be in moderation. But that's not a bad thing. What's important is to enjoy the success, and that is what we will do. You have earned it. Maybe the next success will come as early as Tuesday.
I think the name Remco Evenepoel must always come up when a time trial is coming up. However, there are also 400 meters of altitude to overcome on the 26-kilometer course, which makes it not quite so easy. How are you approaching the stage? Is it actually something where it might be said again at the end that Remco Evenepoel is taking his second win right away? Yes, well, as I said earlier, Remco is currently always among the extended circle of favorites in a time trial.
It is not an easy time trial. Regarding the climbing meters, that is almost 400 all at once. The descent is very, very technical. So first of all, you have to get down quickly and hopefully without crashing. We know the course. We have inspected everything here. And it is a demanding time trial, and it is after a rest day, after the second rest day. And you really have to see how each individual comes out of the rest day, yes. And it is not like you can warm up a bit in a time trial like you can in a road stage. And if your legs are a bit heavy after the rest day, well, that would be after an hour or two in a race. But in a time trial, it is 0 to 100, and that is after a rest day. I'm curious to see how everyone handles it, and it will definitely be exciting. We'll watch it again and talk about it afterwards.
There will be no episode tomorrow on the rest day as usual. Instead, we will be back with full energy on Tuesday for today. And with that, the second week, I thank you very much. From Tuesday on, I will be back with my colleague Tobias Roof. And for today, I send my greetings and congratulations over to France.
Thank you. We will enjoy it and send our best regards back to Rosenheim.
That was the latest edition of Inside Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe, the podcast from OVB Online on the Tour de France. You can find the podcast on all common podcatchers and on the websites of OVB Media and EPEN Media. Thanks for listening and see you in the next episode.